about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Matt Sapinski, and he'll be answering your questions on a fishable feast, fly fishing, and eating your way around the world. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have to leave early, you can return at our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it while you're listening to the show. We'd sure appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Matt Sapinski about a fishable feast, fly fishing, and eating your way around the world. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for the signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Matt, I'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under tonight's show that says register for a free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Matt and Kirk's latest book, A Fishable Feast. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show. And the question will be about something that Matt and I talk about during the show. And you just submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and hopefully you'll win Matt and Kirk's book, A Fishable Feast. Tonight, our guest is Matt Sapinski. Matt is a fly fishing guide, outfitter, instructor, lodge owner and operator, freelance writer and photographer, book author and culinary trained chef from Newaygo, Michigan. He has been fly fishing since the age of 7, having been brought up in the Niagara frontier of upstate New York and spending time as a boy in Poland. In 1995, he opened his Gray Drake and Trout and Eagle lodges, which he and his wife, Lori, have been operating for 18 years. More than that now, I'm sure. He guides clients for trout, steelhead, and salmon 200 days a year in Michigan's Great Lakes, rivers like the Muskegon, Parmaquet, and Big Manistee in St. Joseph. He has fished from Russia to Europe, the UK, Iceland, and extensively throughout North America. Matt's book authorships have been bestsellers and have spanned over the past 20 years. They include The River Journal, Pierre Marquette, Steelhead Dreams, and Steelhead Dreams 10th Anniversary Edition, Orvis Guide to Great Lakes Salmon and Steelhead, and co-authored a contribution to Orvis's ultimate book on fly fishing, The Art and Science of Fly Fishing. His latest book, Steelhead Dreams, the 12th Anniversary Selectivity, and A Fishable Feast. Matt has appeared on national TV and has had 7 cover shots for Fly Fisherman, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, Fly Fish America, American Angler, and also 2 covers on Orvis Annual Fly Fishing Catalog. He acted as an editor and contributor to several magazines, including Fly Fish America, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and the Fly Fisherman magazine. Matt, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Wow, that was a long introduction, and that was quite an old one, isn't it?
We might need to update that.
Well, I don't guide, that's like about 20 years old. Well, I don't guide 200 days a year anymore. We don't do the Gray Drake anymore since COVID. But I still guide, and cool. I had one book in there. Actually, the last time I think I was on your podcast, I did a book, my Ramchild Atlantic Salmon book. Nexus, the brown trout Nexus.
Yeah,
book.
that's right.
Exactly.
I was just
So
looking
that's
because
all
we've
good
done
stuff.
several shows.
Yeah, we did a couple shows, and thanks for having me. And yeah, let's get this party started.
Okay. Did you bring the adult beverages with you tonight, or we short on
No,
that?
I'm going to stay away from that till after the show. I usually try to abstain a little bit because I enjoy them too much. So, or else, we get a little crazy. And, Roger, that's just not the way you are.
I wait till afterwards.
You're a pretty tight white dude. So, I don't want to rock your little world over there.
Yeah, no, it's always a scotch after the show for me, so that's what I look forward to. Yeah, so, yeah, we did past shows. If people want to look up the past shows we did with Matt in the podcast archive, you can search there and search for his name, Matt Sapinski. And, yeah, we did one, the Brown Trout, Atlantic Salmon Nexus, Spring Creek Seduction, and Selectivity. Three shows over the past, 10 years. It's been
30 years.
Since,
30 years? 20 years at least.
10 years, 2015 was the...
Yeah, 2015, all right.
Yeah, it was the
Sounds
first
like
one.
Sounds like you're having fun, right?
It's flying by too fast. Too fast nowadays. Well, good. Let's talk about your latest book, Fishable Feast, Fly Fishing and Eating Your Way Around the World. And so you worked with Kirk Dieter, who's also well-known in the fishing industry and who I've interviewed on my show in the past as well. What inspired you guys to write this book, put it together, and how did it come about?
Yeah, well, Kirk and I sort of met through when COVID broke out in 2020. I had, 2019, I had my Brown Trout Atlantic Salmon Nexus book just came out, and Kirk was going to write a book about brown trout. We did a book signing last night at Schuller Books in Grand Rapids, and he said, son of a bitch, you beat me to the punch on that book because I was going to write a book, and brown trout, and all of a sudden I get a review copy for Trout Magazine to review it. So he said he loved it a lot and gave it high props. And then in 2020, I started a magazine called Hollowed Waters Journal, an online magazine, and he loved that a lot. So we hooked up, and eventually I had a column in there. It was a pretty cool magazine where I had a column on culinary, since that's kind of my background, hotels and culinary. And it was called The Epicurean Angler. And he said, we got together for dinner one day. He says, man, this is a life work for you. You've done 6 books. This could be the culmination of everything you've done. And prior to this, people know me from my fly fishing and from my Hollowed Waters podcast and things of that nature. But people didn't know that I was a hotel food and beverage director, corporate food and beverage director for Sheraton Hotels, Omni Hotels, Renaissance Hotels, some private hotels, and was a garde-manger chef. I was a trained chef, worked in New York City, Washington, D.C., West Coast, San Francisco, all over Europe. So this was a great way to fuse 2 passions together, culinary, cooking, travel, and fly fishing. And no one's really ever did that. We've had such a plethora of books that have come out recently, and they seem to be drumming up the same topic, flies and nymphing and all that stuff. It's all great stuff, but it just gets redundant after a time. So I think we did something that could bring a lot of different people together, not just the diehard RoboCop fly fishermen. And I think the reception we've got so far is pretty amazing. So he's done a lot of traveling with his fly lab and Trout Magazine. So, yeah, it was just a perfect marriage, and we both are connoisseurs of the fish and the photography. He does a lot of warm water, salt water stuff, a lot of salt water, and I primarily do trout and salmon. And so we got to touch on pretty much the whole world and all the continents, and came out pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Who is the book for?
The book
would
is
you
for
say?
Everyone. Okay?
For everyone.
Yes, because you could pick up this book. So our vision for this book was to take National Geographic themes and culture and photography, which the photography in the book is exceptional, and then fuse it together with Anthony Bourdain-esque dive into the culinary and the cultures and the people, and then smother it with fly fishing and flies and, everything that the passion evolves around when it comes to fly fishing. So with fly fishing and food. You don't have to really be fly fishermen to enjoy this book, because it talks about all the cultures and all the things that people love to do, and eating and aromas and scents and villages. And so everybody could identify with this book. And I think that's why it's so successful right now with people, that it's really resonating a lot with, hey, not another book that tells me how to rig up my tackle.
Right.
It's a book about going out and enjoying life. It's about the joie de vivre, as the French would say, the joy of life. Chill out, relax, have something, grab some sausage by the river and a nice beer and watch the fish rise. And you don't have to always pound hook fish constantly till you're blue in the face. You know, I think distorted the whole fly fishing experience.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's in fact a book of stories of locations and countries around the world, and also it's a cookbook, right? I mean, there's every area has recipes. Some are, I'm looking, black and grouper sandwiches, and some are more location, I think, oriented rather than necessarily, it's not necessarily seafood, you know, but a lot of seafood, yeah. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, one of the things I looked at, I go, I wonder, you know, that Belize is one of your sections in here, and I go, I wonder if they've got Belizean stewed chicken in there. Sure enough, it's in there. Because you know, you're talking about a memory, and probably that's one of my memories in Hopkins, Belize, was on the beach, this little kind of, you know, thatched hut place, and this Belizean woman was making that stewed chicken, and it tasted so great. And no matter how I make it at home, it never tastes as good as it did on that beach. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And I think that's kind of where your book's at, too, you know, those experiences. Now, of all the destinations in the book, is there a country that surprised you most, both as an angler and a food lover?
It's a really tough one. I think surprise. Well, you know, in my chapters on Italy and France, you pretty much know what you're going to get from a culinary standpoint from those countries. Those are the foundations. Those are the pillars of modern cooking today. But I think what surprised me a lot is Scotland, because, you know, we all think of haggis and pies and meat pies and blood pudding, things of that's England. We think of those things that, oh, God, I'm not going to eat haggis, and I'm so sick of pies and that stuff, and it's just, you know, Scottish eggs. And the only thing that is really true Scottish that is so Epicurean on all levels is their fine Scottish smoked salmon. But the Scottish cuisine as a whole has really evolved because of all the immigrants from Europe that are there, the Indian, the Pakistani, a lot of Polish, a lot of Czechs, a lot of Slovenians. It's a melting pot. So when you go to Scotland today, you're just not running into your Scottish person that talks like this all the time. You get bombarded with different accents all the time from different people. So their cuisine has really changed because of that. And Iceland, too, because Iceland has a lot of immigrants into Iceland, and you're totally overwhelmed by the diversity of seafood that is there and the exceptional quality of the seafood, like langoustines and scallops and their fish, and everything just is perfect. And you put that all together, and you have to have a fishable feast, or a movable feast, as they would say.
Yeah, yeah. Now, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Scotland is being a standout there. What made you decide which, out of all the places in the world, what was truly a fishable feast for the book?
Well, I don't think we really, like, measured, like, we're going to make this book and we're going to go and find fishable feast places. These are just places that we've been to that were part of our journey and part of our story. And every place is a fishable feast if you make it. I mean, and, you know, that we didn't select places. I would have loved to include Spain in there. We're probably in the next book. Spain is a culinary mecca. And I mean, you could find a fishable feast anywhere you go if you look for it. And so, yeah, we didn't really choose anything. We just sort of, these are the places we've been to. I was fortunate to be working as an apprentice, learning the hotel and culinary trade in Europe when I was a young man, and a lot of my chapters are about that. And I spent a lot of time in those iconic places like Austria and Italy and all over the place. So those were places that were naturals. And then in my fly fishing career, I spent a lot of time in Iceland. I've been there so many times. And, you know, Poland is, I lived on a farm when I was a little boy in Poland on my dad's farm. That was something that I talked about in the introduction to my Brown Trout Atlantic Salmon Nexus book. That was the ultimate fishable feast because on this farm in northern Poland, I would watch my grandmother make big pots of soup and watch my uncles butcher pigs, and we go hunting for pheasants and stags, and the gardens were flowing. I learned everything at a young age of 9, 10 years old. That I was already cooking stuff at that age, and then to combine it with my hotel career. So I was privy to work in a lot of these places that sort of were, you know, nurtured the whole book concept.
And I'm not sure, we got a question in from Nicholas Conklin in Texas, and he was on our show too a while back talking about fishing in Texas. But he says, do you have any advice, and I don't know if you do this, or hardened tips for traveling with a proper set of knives, spices, or other cooking tools, especially when on a destination trip? I mean, do you cook on your trips, or are you mainly partaking of, you know, the local fare?
Yeah, so I understand his question. I think if you're going to go on a destination, if you're going to rough it, you're going to pack in, you're going to do something. Yeah, but all depends. I mean, destination trip could be a very fancy lodge somewhere that has a great chef, that has meals there. Or it could be, you know, I'm going to rough it out in the mountains of Morocco, and I better take food and knives with me and kill what I catch or kill what I hunt. So, I mean, if you're going to do that, I think Nicholas was talking about stuff like that. You know, don't take anything elaborate. There's a lot of small kits. I'm a big Henkel fan. I've always liked the German Henkel knives, and they even make something like it. I carry with me sometimes. It's a 6-piece travel knife set. It's dirt cheap. It's like $100. It has everything you need. It's got a cutting board. It's in sort of like a very tight, well-put-together carrying case. And the thing is, you don't ever want to take really good knives with you or anything like that, because you're going to lose them. And every time you take stuff, you always lose it. So, but if you want something roughing it, and you're going to go in and backpack, or you're going to do something like that, these little handy knife sets, and a lot of different manufacturers make them, that are very handy, and they could pack in a backpack really well or in a travel case. But check out that one that I use, that Henkel Forager Accent set. It's pretty cool. Spices, you know, the mother spices of all, the rosemaries, the oreganos, the basils, the thymes, the popper, you know, everything. You could go crazy. You go sage and tarragon, and you could, if you want to get exotic, turmeric and cumin and curry. Yeah, you could bring all that. The more you bring, the more you're going to probably lose. And but it comes in handy. And, yeah, so I think build on where you're going, what destination is. And if you're going to have to be cooking, then you should bring something as minimal as something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember in Italy when I was in Tuscany, outside the villas we were staying in, you know, there's hedges of rosemary.
Yeah,
you go to Tuscany, you don't have to bring any rosemary, that's for sure. It's all over the place. Yeah, yeah. He also had another question. He says, what good advice for those fishing overseas or traveling to new locations and having a plan for the cuisine? What's good advice?
The plan for the cuisine is don't plan, okay? When you go somewhere, go with the flow. Go and eat where the locals eat and spend a lot of time in outdoor markets. And, you know, just try to chill out. And I think a lot of times when we go to places, we try to say, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this. And I saw this on so-and-so's so show and Stanley Tucci's show or Eva Longoria's show or, you know, I got to do this, got to do this. And, yeah, I mean, those are iconic places you have to travel. But the best places are the holes in the wall. And hang with the locals. First, assimilate. Don't look like you're the ugly American standing out like a sore thumb. And try to go to these cool places. And just spend a lot of time outside. The beauty of these destinations are outdoor eateries, no matter where you go, in Europe or Africa or Asia. It's all street stuff, street food and some of the best food. So, yeah, and then do some research. Try to find out which, if you have the money, if you have big wallets, you could go to an iconic Michelin star restaurant. And if you don't, you're not going to miss anything because some of the best food is the non-pretentious food, if that helps.
Yeah, I went this summer. I went to France with my kids and my cousins from Germany. And we met in France and took a boat up and down the Yonne River. And one day we were just going into a village and they had a market going, and I looked down and I saw this huge bin of chanterelles. I mean, they were just gorgeous. And, you know, I couldn't resist. I just had them bag some of those up, went right back and some butter, and I was good to go. You know, had a whole pan full of sauteed chanterelles. So, like you're saying, you know, look for opportunities too, right? What's right in front of you is maybe really good and enticing as well. Let me take another quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about eating and fishing around the world. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com, or you can call them at 866-845-9284. Again, theuglybugflyshop.com, or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Matt Sapinski about a fishable feast to fly fishing and eating your way around the world. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage, Ask About Fly Fishing. Use the Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Matt, I always ask my guests at this time in the show, what's going on in your fly fishing world nowadays? What are you up to? And what are you getting into trouble with?
Well, yeah, so we, you know, we're in the Great Lakes, and the Great Lakes is obviously spring is migratory steelhead time. Big brown trout time. Michigan is a great brown trout state, one of the first places in the Western Hemisphere that brought the brown trout here. So, yeah, you know, the hatches are just starting up. We have the piers and certain rivers and lakes have Atlantic salmon that are running towards the shoreline looking for bait fish. So, yeah, we got everything going on. Warm water species just open up bass and pike and muskie. And, I mean, just an amazing fishable feast is available where we're at right now. Yeah, it's all coming together. And cold spring, which I like a lot. A cold spring is very good for us because it'll keep water temperatures cooler for the rest of the year. We had a lot of rain. We had flooding 2 weeks ago, massive flooding that made the evening news, national evening news several nights. My river, the Muskegon River, made the national news. So heavy-duty flooding and evacuating of homes. Luckily, we were on a high bluff, so we're okay. But, yeah, it's been a crazy weather year, as it is all over the place.
Oh, man, last night here in Colorado, I got 12 inches of snow.
That's wonderful.
I mean, we waited all winter for it, and it comes in May, believe it or not. And it was on the national news today, too. So, yeah.
Somebody's praying, right? Because you guys need some
a
water.
A lot. Oh, we need the water, yeah. Yeah, I know the East Coast got plenty of water this year, but we didn't get any. So, yeah, we're welcoming it with open arms. Yeah, now, if people want to follow what you do and what you're up to, what websites, should they, where can they find
yeah.
you?
Yeah, graydrake.com, GRAYDRAKE, graydrake, one word, .com. Talks about what I do. Also, my Hollowed Waters website, hollowedwaters.com. And, you know, that, and then my podcast, I'm going to start my podcast back up. I took a little break. I had back surgery this winter, so I'm finally healing up from that and could sit at long periods of time. So, yeah, all of the above.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that back surgery is no fun. I did that 2 years ago, but changed my life afterwards. For the better. So I hope it worked out well for you too. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. Now, another question here is, how does sharing meals with local anglers deepen the fly fishing experience for you?
Sharing meals, well, it's great. You know, you're at the lodge and you see people. That question is, I guess, two parts. So local anglers, if you're in a country and if you're in Italy, for instance, whether you're in Tuscany or Umbria or up north near the Alps, the local anglers are the friendliest people. They share ideas, fly patterns. You'll find out their techniques are just as similar as ours, and they usually point you in the right direction. The sharing meals, I think one of the big points of the book is, you know, we came up with the title. I think that's kind of interesting. Originally, we were going to call it Epicurean Angler.
And then our publisher said they didn't really like that idea much, so Kirk came up with a great title, Fishable Thief, based on Hemingway's Movable Thief. The Movable Thief was his posthumous book that was published based on a bunch of manuscripts of when he was in Paris, and he was a starving writer, and he was walking through Paris, and he's saying that everywhere, if you live long enough, everywhere in Paris is like a movable feast. The food, the fashion, architecture, the art. It's just a sight for the eyes. It's just a beauty for the eyes. And that's how we came up with the Fishable Feast. And the more I did my research on my chapter, France is one of my best chapters, because I was a hotelier and I was fascinated by Charles Ritz. And Charles Ritz wrote a book called The Fly Fisher's Life, and he was a fanatical fly fisher, and he was the originator of Ritz Hotels. And he was also a collaborator with Frank Sawyer of the Pheasant Tail Nymph fame, a British gillie on the River Avon. And they also collaborated with Pizon and Michel Rods to make bamboo rods and Sawyer's parabolic rod. So he sort of had a fraternity of people he was friends with, so the lefty craze of the world and the Schwieberts, and everybody sort of got together. And the fraternity of people that he brought with him to his club on the River Rille, which is the river I talk about in France that I was at. And he had the Fachio Club, which is the brown trout club. And, you know, he had a beautiful little mill club there, a little chateau where he'd be eating dinner with Frank Sawyer and Escoffier, the chef that pretty much invented modern cuisine, would come in from Paris and bring some pâtés and foie gras, and Hemingway would pop in for dinner, and somebody else would show up, and some other dignitary would show up, and they were just chilling in the country, eating good food, drinking good wine and cognacs and whiskeys, and fishing to blueing olive hatches. And that fraternity is what this book is about. It's not just eating a meal and go fishing. That whole joint union of the celebration of life is critical to what the Fishable Feast is when you read it.
Yeah, I hear you there. Briggs, I just reread last year the Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises.
And, the Sun Also Rises, yeah, beautiful.
It started in Paris. They went down to Spain. They were fly fishing down there and doing the bullfights and stuff. But it was the whole thing of kind of what you were just talking about, too, you know. Enjoyment of life, yeah. But, yeah, Steve Schramm in California wrote this in, and that's kind of funny, so I'll read it. He says, if you were limited to one Atlantic salmon dry fly pattern and one subsurface pattern, which ones would you choose and why, and what beverage would you pair with each?
I get kind of a kick out of that. Yeah, so Atlantic salmon dry fly pattern, I mean, the bomber is just, you know, the deer hair bomber is the pattern. It moves water, and you could tie it in various colors of deer hair. I usually like blue and green colors with a little bit of white in the springtime. And as you're getting closer to spawning season, where the eyes and the corneas and the cones and rods of the Atlantic salmon eyes turn towards the reddish-orange spectrum, because they're in the river for so long that that's the spectrum they focus on. So Atlantic salmon focus on blue-greens in the spring, which is the offshore colors that in their foraging in that zone, and then when they come to the rivers, they get focused on the red, black, orange spectrum. So a bomber you can't beat, and you could tie it in various ways. And then subsurface pattern, there's really one pattern that you need anywhere in the world for Atlantic salmon, and that's a Willie Gunn. Three colors, it's black, orange, and yellow, and you combine that in a tube fly or any way you want to tie it, traditional or just simple with deer hair. It could catch fish anywhere there's Atlantic salmon. What would I pair with them? That's interesting. Depends where I'm at. From a wine standpoint, we could talk a million ways, but I usually, with Atlantic salmon fishing, you have to pair a bloody good Scotch, me mate, a Scottish whiskey. So I'd say, you know, some of the Highland single malts, Glenfarclas, you know, Macallan, some of those ones, Abalure, are great to pair with Scotch. So since the Scots invented pretty much the modern Atlantic salmon ways of fishing, you must honor them with Scottish whiskey, correct? You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Yeah, sounds good to me. Yeah, it's a nice pairing there. Question came in on the internet here from Treg in Moscow, Idaho. He says, is there anything you would not eat from a street vendor like ceviche?
Yeah, it's from street vendors, ceviche, anything that's kind of raw, you got to be skeptical of. And depending on how warm the climate is, and if you're in stuff like that. So, yeah, I tend to stay away from raw stuff or sushi as much because you don't know how it's kept from street vendors. You want to, I would say, stick with something that's cooked and that isn't going to be potential to give you some bad stomach problems. That's a
Yeah.
good idea.
Yeah, I have a Spanish tutor that I have down in Oaxaca, Mexico, and I was asking him a similar question once, and he said, well, I kind of, he says, you got to watch. He says, are there a lot of people there every morning? Are they lined up? He says that it's probably pretty good and healthy. But yeah, if there's not many people buying food at these vendors, then stay away. So that was
Yeah,
his
exactly.
local advice.
That's a good local advice. People are a good sign, for sure.
Just like any restaurant, right? It's
Absolutely.
amazing. Yeah, how I mean, you've seen two restaurants side by side, one's full and the other's, got two people at one table. You kind of feel sorry for them, but there's got to be a reason for that.
Yep, for sure. Good food, good service, regardless of what the facility looks like. It all comes down to that price value and making you feel important. That's the key to dining today. Importance and good food and price value. You put those three together, it's not important about how the place looks, to be honest with you.
And it's just like that little hut on the beach in Hopkins, Belize. Wasn't much to look at, but the food was incredible.
Oh, for
The
sure.
Were there any destinations where the cuisine taught you something important about the local fishery or ecosystem?
No, I mean, in Iceland, the cuisine, no, they're not related. I don't see any correlation between the fishery and the local cuisine. Unless you're doing saltwater stuff, a lot of the local cuisine probably tell you what kind of fish you're going to be fishing for. But in the fly fishing world today, everything's so catch and release oriented, that, people don't really, unless you're in Alaska and you got to have halibut and stuff like that. But yeah, I wouldn't say it really does.
Yeah, I was kind of
I can't
thinking.
identify with this question.
I was thinking along the lines of, I heard, I don't know if this is true, but that in Iceland that they do, that you can get whale. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. Did you find that the
Yeah,
case?
you can't get whale. They eat puffin too, which a lot of places don't eat puffin, wouldn't think of it because it's a cute little bird. They have fermented shark, which is absolutely horrendous tasting. But it doesn't mean you're going to go shark fishing. So, the two are not really connected at all. No.
Not connected. Let's see here. It's time for me to take another quick break, so hang tight and I'll be right back. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead, trout, or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit pureskagit.com. Again, that's pureskagit.com. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Matt Spinski about the Fishable Feast. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to the homepage, fill out that form, and we'll try to get your question answered on the show tonight. Okay, so was there a destination in the book that offered the most underrated fly fishing experience? If I'm posing that
Yeah,
question right.
so it says, what destination in the book offers the most underrated fly fishing experience? Yeah, I would say, very frankly, that the Great Lakes, because as I was
Great
mentioning
Lakes.
earlier, the Great Lakes has everything. I mean, and it's dirt cheap, and compared to a lot of destinations. So you got every trout, salmon, steelhead fishery possible. You know, it has incredible warm water fisheries, bass, pike, muskie. I mean, it really has everything, and it's very underrated. Some of the best trout species, some of the biggest brown trout are caught here. We even have an incredible Atlantic salmon fishery. You take Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, Lake Huron, Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, it has it all, and it has so much more. There's enough water in the Great Lakes to flood the continental United States up to 10 feet, and that's just full of game fish. So I think if you're underrating something, the Great Lakes is totally underrated, because we think about New Zealand and we keep throwing out, you know, destinations, you know, Argentina, New Zealand. Yeah, they're incredible destinations, don't get me wrong. But you're going to pay for those destinations, and you got to travel to those destinations. It's going to cost you arm and leg to get there. Anybody could get to the Great Lakes. And, well, now, thanks to our gas prices, it's a little more expensive, but, you know, let's hope that goes away. But, yeah, I'd say the Great Lakes. You know, and even like Colorado, from trout standpoint, in Kirk's chapter on Colorado, you know, very underrated. And, you know, Alaska, a lot of these continental destinations are highly underrated, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of them in the lower 48 here we can drive to, you know, within a day or two. And, yeah, it's, I think I see where you're going with the Great Lakes, because there is so much. And then even just moving off the Great Lakes, like smallmouth bass fishing in Wisconsin and things like that.
Yeah, the driftless area, Spring Creeks in Wisconsin. I mean, it just it goes on and on and on.
Cool. What country had the most memorable river or lodge meals after a day on the water?
You know, that's another tough one. I'd say probably Italy, because when you get off the water, fishing some of the Spring Creeks in Tuscany or Umbria, you're going to have a feast like you've never had, and the quality of food there is just amazing. That is probably one extreme one. Iceland, too, the quality of fishing is incredible. The few lodges that are there have incredible cuisine that's so fresh. You're eating food that was seafood that was caught that day, and lamb, and and Scotland, too. You know, the bounty of the land and the diversity of the ecosystems in places like Scotland and Italy and Austria, which I talk about, and France, they're just one giant movable feast, fishable feast. It's tough to zero in on one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we, my son and I went down to Chile and Patagonia this spring. Right. And the one night when we came back, it was a first for me, but they have what they call a quincho, which is kind of like a little hut where they do their barbecuing. And they took us down there, and they had a lamb, you know, spread eagle on a wood rack in front of the fire roasting this lamb. And that's going to be a memorable experience. You know, you don't see that every day. So that's one that I will always remember.
For sure.
But
Kirk talks about that in his book, his Argentina chapter. He does a lot of really good stuff. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah, the Argentines do the same kind of thing down there. Yeah. It's, again, a beautiful country, incredible food, and great fishing. What more do you want, right? Question about all your recipes in here. Are these recipes that, is it a combination of you getting recipes from people on your trips? Or did you design all these recipes, or how did the recipes come about?
They're kind of a combination of everything. Our goal was with the book is to make comfort gourmet cuisine. Comfort gourmet is comfort food that you could make easily at home in 45 minutes or less, but with a gourmet twist. And a lot of these recipes I've used for years and years. Some of them we picked up along the way by being there in the location. But, you know, you take like comfort gourmet cuisine, hearty cuisine. So like meatloaf, for instance. Meatloaf's comfort food. You can meatloaf, mashed potatoes, green beans, carrots. That's comfort food. Good gravy. So we took it and made a Montana meatloaf in the Montana chapter called a ranch meatloaf, ranch bison meatloaf. So we took beef, pork, and bison, and we infused it with Gruyere cheese and applewood smoked bacon on top and made like a nice glaze over it, Bordelaise glaze. And so you're getting something basic like meatloaf, But the flavors are just through the roof because we infused all these different ingredients. So that's what we've done with the cuisine in the book, is to do that flair that's common to the area, kind of common, but that there's a story behind, like, you know, veal marsala in Quebec. You know, normally you think of veal marsala, you think of Sicily, you think of France, because marsala wines, and, you know, Portugal and things of that nature, and Spain. But when I go to Quebec quite often, a chef over there made the most incredible veal marsala, and he put them over pappardelle noodles, and it was amazing. And you could take that recipe, and I made a diversion the other night, and we do pork tenderloin instead of veal, because pork tenderloin is easier to find. And some people are offended by veal tenderloins and stuff like that because of the unethical way of how they raise. So, and then we did that, and the pork just gave it a little more richness to the sauce with tons of mushrooms and marsala wine. And we served it over mashed potatoes, and we put glazed carrots with dill and pickles and some spring mushrooms and morels, and we had a sort of Alpine dish, Austrian dish. So our dishes are meant to improvise. So you can impart your flair into it and make it any style that you want to do. So that's the gist of what we try to do with this book.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, you stepped up the meatloaf recipe, right? You know,
we stepped it up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I'm seeing that throughout the book here as I look through. I'm just getting hungry as I'm going through the book here. that doesn't help. Yeah, a lot of these recipes look great to me. I love to cook, and I'm definitely going to try some of these for sure. Was out of all these fishing experiences, was one location more technical, would you say, than others?
Yeah, so probably the most technical out of all the fishing, the chapters that I have in the book is the Catskills, because Catskills are my lifelong sort of place. I used to fish it when I was a little boy growing up in upstate New York with my dad. I met my wife has a summer home on the Neversink River there in the Catskills. My selectivity book and my Nexus book have heavy Catskill influences, and the fishing is probably the most intense from a selectivity standpoint for trout. The wild brown trout in those tailwaters and freestone rivers could be extremely demanding. So to really be a good Catskill angler, you really got to know your bugs. You got to know your techniques. You got to know your presentation more so than anywhere in the world. So if you could catch a fish on the east branch of the Delaware, a big wild brown on the east branch of the Delaware, you could probably catch a trout anywhere on the planet. And they're an hour and a half from New York City, so there's some of the snootiest fish on the planet, just like some of the people can be in that city. And it's amazing how the trout mimic the population, but it'll make your game up. So if you're a Catskill angler, you're probably one of the best fly anglers on the planet, in my opinion.
Interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but it makes perfect sense to me. Yeah. How was you did the chapter on Italy, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how was the fishing there? I mean, the food is, you know, that's unquestionable. Yeah. I know the food's good there. But you don't hear a lot about fly fishing in Italy.
Yeah, well, it's kind of sad because I talk about the Nera River, which is the most beautiful spring creek you ever imagine, which is in Umbria, which is an hour north of Rome. And I was working in the hospitality restaurant hotel business in Rome for a while. And you could take a train from Rome and go fishing on a beautiful spring creek, on a catch-and-release, fly-fishing-only spring creek that has got the most beautiful wild brown trout on the planet, with one of the best guides I've ever been with, and Luca Castellani. And you could be back in Rome eating at the Trevi Fountain with your family for dinner. And the same in Tuscany, the spring creek's there. And then you got the tailwaters up north, and you got the lakes up north, the big alpine lakes. You got the rivers up above Torino and that area. It's just so beautiful up there. And so you got the flare of the alpine rivers, the glacial melt rivers, the alpine rivers. Then you got the lower spring creeks. You got the lakes. And then you even got saltwater fishing off the coast, the Amalfi Coast, Sicily, all over the whole coastal area. So the fishing is great because everybody goes there for vacation. And I think what this book is trying to tell people that when you go on vacation with your family and go to Europe, a lot of people say, oh, I'm just going to Europe. I got to go see the sights. Got to go to the museums. Got to go to the Colosseum. Got to go to the Pantheon. You got to go here. Got to go here. Got to go here. But they don't realize that there's tremendous fishing there. And
right.
And the Europeans are getting very, very conservation-minded. So they're like the Nara River has catch-and-release fishing, flies-only sections. So it's starting to become very, like, very similar to the United States and Canada and other places in the world where they value the fishing. So, yeah, I mean, fishing's great there. Fishing could be great in France, could be great in Austria, could be great in certain parts of Germany and in the Alps, Poland. I talk a lot about Poland and the Poland chapter. There's great fishing in the Carpathian Alps there. A lot of the comp fishermen, all the Euro nymphers, Polish nymphing, Czech nymphing, it all started on those rivers over there, the Dunajec and all those rivers there. So, you know, the Son and a lot of the European competitions are there on those rivers. So, yeah, I mean, we got to open our eyes. And Spain has some of the most beautiful rivers in the Pyrenees and Asturias and Atlantic salmon rivers in Spain. And it just goes on. But the tourism clouds us, we don't think. And they're not
right.
Fishing those rivers as much because like they do in Argentina and Chile, it's all about the fly fishing. There it's about
right.
The history and the tourism. So if you cut through all that, I guarantee you go on Google, you're going to find a guide that knows his stuff and is going to take you to wherever you want to go and any type of fishing you want. You can even fish in Venice. In the downtown Venice, you could fish through the streets underneath Venice that have spring creeks in them that have big rainbow trout in them. Kind of incredible.
Yeah, that trip we took down the Yon River this summer, I didn't bring any fishing gear because it was a kind of a family thing, you know, and like you say, a tourist thing. And I kicked myself because I'm on the boat and I'm seeing fish on the boat, and I could have easily fished the whole trip almost because it was, you know, really laid back, right?
Yep.
And I missed an opportunity. And then I saw a lot of local people fishing from the shore, and I go, man, I didn't do my research on that one, and it would have been so easy to do.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I guess you got to do a little bit more research. And, you know, like you say, too, these certain locations get all the press, right? New Zealand, Iceland, you know, Patagonia.
Right.
But there are plenty of other, you know, I guess once you get past, again, it's getting past the allure of, you know, big fish, exotic locations, and the times that most of us enjoy maybe more could be just a little stream with 10-inch trout in it, right? But the whole experience is wonderful, maybe more wonderful than some of these more exotic places. Yeah, yeah. Now, did you say you're not running a lodge anymore? You're done with that?
No, we don't. We had a bed and breakfast. We did a bed and breakfast for close to 30 years, but then we got shut down when COVID came about, and we never decided to do it back up again because we were losing money the whole time. So it's kind of funny when you finally do the books and you finally talk to an accountant and says, you know what, you guys did a great job there, but you were losing money the whole time you were doing that. And they're like, what? Most people in the fly fishing business lose money all the time. They don't realize it because they're so caught up into the passion of the angle that they don't realize it. And then they like, oh, wow, I wasn't realizing that I'm losing money out of this. So, yeah, we don't do it anymore. We're very happy not to.
You're kind of
we had enough of people for a while, to be honest with you.
Yeah, your sound is kind of like sounding like you're underwater right now. So I'm wondering if anything's changed on your end there.
How's it now? Good?
No, it's breaking up. Yeah, and it just started doing that. It was fine up until just a minute ago.
Living in the country with cell phones, not too good. How's it now? Good? Can you hear?
Well, we'll give it a try. Yeah, that's better. Maybe
you're,
it's good
you're
now.
Breaking
we'll
up
give
on
it a try.
Too. You're breaking up.
Oh, I am?
Too. Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Let's go. Let's
chug
through this. We'll get through it.
Yeah. I'm looking at cedar planked Atlantic salmon in your book. I've always wondered about that. Is that worthwhile to cook on the planks? Do you really get a flavor there that you can't get any other way?
Yeah, it really does. It really imparts a flavor to it. You can't beat and you let those, you soak those planks really well and you char them and you put that salmon on there or any type of fish really. And the flavor is just nice smokiness to it, and it keeps it nice and moist, the moisture from the wood. So, yeah, I would definitely give it a shot. You know, it can't hurt. And it makes the flesh, you can make it nice and charred on the outside, but nice and medium rare on the inside like salmon should be. We tend to overcook salmon a lot. So, yeah, I think that's the beauty of planking. Yep.
Can you reuse those planks?
You can if you don't beat them up too hard. Yeah, I mean, if you don't beat them up too hard. Yeah, they can be reused, and sometimes those have the best flavor on them, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Mushrooms. Oh, I see. Yeah, here's a picture of all the chanterelles. Looks just like what I was talking about. And Yeah. This must be in the France section, yeah.
That's in the France section, but that actually is of a beautiful picture that Tom Rosenbauer gave me, because he's got some of the best chanterelles in the United States where he is in Vermont. I shouldn't say that, but you got to find them. But Tom will never show you anything about that. He will never tell you anything. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of like the best fishing hole, right? We don't want to be talking about it, right? That's the same thing with mushrooms.
Exactly. Best fishing hole, best morel mushroom spots, chanterelle mushrooms. Chanterelles on, there's some great states on the East Coast that get some beautiful ones. Oyster mushrooms, chicken of the woods, morels, that's the big thing. In Europe, of course, it's the tartufo, the truffles, the blanco and nero tartufo, which is the truffles, which the dogs find when you're in Umbria or Tuscany or any of those places in France also. So mushrooms are king for sure in Europe.
Yeah. You talked about Eva Longoria. I've been watching they're searching for France recently. And yeah, they were talking about truffles last night when I watched it. That and visiting a snail farm in France. Yeah.
Escargot.
Yeah. How has, let me back up, because we talked about this a little bit, but I didn't ask you specifically. Did any of the recipes in the book come directly from guides or locals, families you met along the way?
I think a couple that Kirk did. He got a couple from guides, but not necessarily. No, I don't think on my part, just the chefs in those countries, like his veal marsala, the way he did it with the sauce. And then, the innkeeper in the place that I stayed at in Umbria, he was from Venice, and he did a lot of orzo, like the shrimp scampi orzo. Those came from them. So usually from the innkeeper, from the chefs at the lodge, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But none of mine came from guys, no.
Yeah. Well, I suppose like the one Belizean stewed chicken probably came from somebody local down there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That was Kurt, yeah. That was when I kind of caught my eye. Let me, I've got to take another break here, so let me do that. We'll come back and we'll talk more about food and fishing. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and the Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish to preserve and to protect, promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Matt Sapinski about a fishable feast. If you'd like to ask Matt a question, just go to our homepage and fill out that form, and we'll try to answer it on the show tonight. Oh, gosh. Okay, so here we go. Trey Goings in Idaho that wrote in earlier, he goes, how about Rocky Mountain oysters? So,
Not a fan.
No, I had them at the ball field, Rockies field one time, and didn't become a fan either. So they're all yours, Treg.
Good protein, though. Good protein.
Good protein, yeah. He also said here, our guide in Loreto made ceviche on the back of the panga, and he said it was excellent. Well, yeah, can't get any fresher than that, right?
That's for sure. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And then when we were in Belize, I was on a friend's boat, a sailboat, first time I was in Belize, and we had, there had some divers there that we gave them a few bucks, and they got us some conch, and they cleaned them for us, and we made conch fritters right on the sailboat there. Couldn't get any fresher, you know, so you got to look for those opportunities when they're there.
For sure.
Do you think there's any big mistakes people make when traveling internationally on their fishing trips? Anything we should do differently or you see it being done commonly?
No, I don't. I mean, there's no mistakes today. I mean, you lose stuff, people stuff, your rods get stolen, you lose your reels, you don't carry stuff on with you that you should have. Baggage is, air travel today is a freaking nightmare. I mean, it's a disaster. So you got to just do your homework, make sure you dot your P's and dot your I's and P's. And, you know, you just have to do a little bit of research because depending on destinations you go to, there's strikes over there. Like you've been to Chile, you never know what you're going to get in Santiago. You don't know what's going to happen. So I think just do your homework the best you can. Pack minimally and pack whatever you really need securely with you on the plane. And, you know, it's tough traveling today, really tough.
Yeah, I found out, I can't remember if it was South America or Central America, but they're now a lot of those airlines down there don't allow you to take fishing rods and stuff on the plane. I mean, they have
yep.
to be checked.
Yep.
Whereas here, we can bring them on the plane. So that's something you need to research, like you say, to find out what's going on.
Absolutely. Research.
You talked about, you know, a lot of the recipes in your book are fish recipes. There again, it seems like a lot of people make mistakes cooking fish. What tips can you give us as a chef on cooking fish in general?
Probably basic tip to make sure it's the freshest fish you could find. Look at the scales. Look at the shininess of it. Look at the texture of the meat. Put your finger into it. Make sure it's firm. And then overcooking fish. We tend to overcook fish a lot. In the Bible, Jesus ate loaves and fishes. They didn't do any grilling or anything. They just ate them raw. So most fish you can eat raw, some you cannot because of parasites and things. But we tend to overcook fish and always try to keep it on the sort of medium side, and which keeps the moisture in it because once you start to overcook it, you dry it out. So, and pan searing is always a great way to control the temperature. Grilling, make sure you have the proper heat going because you, if too much, could just dry it out right away. And poaching is a great way to do things like salmon. Moisture is the key to fish, maintaining the moisture. The moment you start drying it out, fish is worthless.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably, like you said earlier, the salmon seems to dry out rather quickly. It doesn't take long to cook them, right? I mean,
no,
you're
very
grilling
easy,
salmon
very quickly.
Is like a couple
eight,
minutes
eight
on
minutes,
each side and you're
seven,
done,
7, 8 minutes. Yeah, a couple minutes on each side. You're broiling or baking it. A fillet of salmon, a nice Atlantic salmon fillet or whatever, 7 minutes, 8 minutes max. And you want that nice red flakiness, that moisture, a little bit char on the outside, but that flakiness, that melt in your mouth. That's what you have to have with fish. And if not, it's just going to be dry and cardboard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you could revisit one destination from your book tomorrow for both the fishing and the food, where would you go and why?
Probably Iceland. You just can't get enough
Iceland.
Iceland
again?
Yeah, Iceland. It just grows on you. I mean, it's just the people, the chill attitude, the diversity. I love seafood. I could live on seafood. I could eat seafood for the rest of my life, and you could just feast over there on that. But plus, there's two fish that I wrote a book about, brown trout and Atlantic salmon. And it's just, everything just comes together there. And you never feel like you're hurried. You never feel like you're trying to get railroaded by people. That's the beauty of Iceland. So I highly recommend it to people. And the vistas and the beauty of the country sells itself. You really can't get enough of it, in my opinion.
Would that, this is a kind of a combination question with what I just asked, but is there a destination in the book that offers the best balance of accessibility, great fishing, and incredible food? Would it be Iceland as well?
Yeah, I think because you could do a lot of rivers in Iceland that aren't famous rivers. A lot of the rivers in the world that you have to pay a fortune for, and Iceland could be very expensive. But then you could go for brown trout and it not be expensive. But then again, without the foreign destinations, what's the best value for your buck? Could be Colorado, could be Alaska, could be the Catskills, could be Montana, could be, a lot of those places. And, we tend to focus on the exotic destinations, New Zealand and things like that, which are amazing in itself, but they're going to be pricey. And a lot of times the paradise, the grass is greener sometimes in your backyard. And sometimes focus on your backyard and you might find the most joy.
Yeah. I hear you there. It's, I remember when I've only been to Australia once and it was for work, but I'm flying out of Denver, going over Utah, Arizona and that, and I'm going, what am I doing going to Australia for? Within a day's drive of where I live, there's some of the most beautiful places in the world, And,
exactly.
Within a day's drive of where you live is some of the best fishing in the world. We don't appreciate what's in our own backyard sometimes.
Absolutely.
Until we leave and come back. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
we've got
a huge country, with a lot of variants. And like you did a chapter in Louisiana too, right?
Yeah, Louisiana, yeah. Florida Keys. I mean, let's say rah-rah North America. I did Quebec and, the Great Lakes. And so, yeah, there's just so much there. So I think what our book teaches us, okay, several things, okay, let's put this into perspective. Our book says that if you go to these wonderful destinations like Italy and France and Austria and Sound of Music and England and stuff, you can fish there, and the fishing is world class, and it could be the foundation of fishing like England is, and things of that nature. So take a fly rod with you on all these trips and you could find this no matter where you go. But the most important thing is to realize that we have fishing and food go together in such a beautiful way because they're passions. And people that fish do it because of the passion for fishing, passion for fly fishing. And it's that primal need by every person to gather something, to catch something. In the book, if you read my introduction, The Power of Comfort Food and Fly Fishing and Fishing, it's perfect because if you recall the time when you caught your first fish as a boy and you grabbed hold of that trout and you hung onto it and you squeezed it, and you wanted to kiss it and embrace it and dad, mom, come on, I got a fish.
Right.
And even an adult does that and they want to embrace it. There's this primal Neanderthal savageness in us that we just caught something and it's ours and it's mine. And I gathered food and I caught a fish on a fly pattern and I made this dish of food and I added this spice and this herb to it and it just kicked it up. It's about the primal needs of scent, smell, possession, comfort, security. This is all what this book is about. It's not just about lodges and where'd you eat and how come you ate it. That's what our book is about, the whole experience.
Yeah, and I counted them up. You've covered 20 destinations in that book. So that's quite the accomplishment of hitting all those places and combining the food and the fishing. And, yeah, I think we all agree that the way you described it is probably that in a nutshell and very well described. Well,
yeah.
I think that's a good place to kind of cut things off here and call it a day. But let's stick with me for just a little bit longer, Matt. I'm going to give away a few of these prizes, including your book, courtesy of Rizzoli. Yeah, Rizzoli. So we're going to do that. So hang tight here for just another minute, and we'll do that. And we'll call it an evening, and I can go have my scotch.
Me too. I'm going to have a big one.
Okay. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, They can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show. It says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away a few prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for the tonight show, it's too late, but make sure you do so for our next show. You don't want to miss your chance at the great prizes we have to offer. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So the first thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org, flyfishersinternational.org. And our winner there is, let's see here, at the drawing, Mary Jo Kirk in Arizona. Mary Jo Kirk. So congratulations, Mary Jo. I'm sure you'll enjoy your membership to Fly Fishers International. And the second thing we're giving away is a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. To learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. And another great organization to support. And our winner there is Ed Hovsepian. In Massachusetts. Sorry, Ed, I destroyed your last name, but that's a tough one for me. But anyway, congratulations. And we'll reach out to both you folks about how you get your prizes. And then our grand prize tonight is for a copy of A Fishable Feast, Fly Fishing and Eating Your Weight Around the World by Kirk Dieter and Matthew Sipinski. And, foreword by Tom Rosenbauer. So a lot of great people put this book together. And so the way you do this is you fill out the form on our homepage of our website there, put in your answer along with your name and location. First person that gets it correct will win Matt and Kirk's book here. So the question is, I'm going to make this pretty easy. What did Matt say he thought the most underrated fishery that was covered in the book? Which was the underrated fishery that was covered in the book? So let's see if we can get somebody that gives us the right answer. There's a slight delay here, Matt, until they hear the question. And then, of course, they have to type fast. So let's see what we can get here. Give them a second and see if we can get ourselves a winner here. Nobody knows. Oh, okay. I think we got our winner. The answer is, I'll check with you, Matt, was the Great Lakes.
The Great Lakes, yes, it is. Correct.
It is. And so Mary Jo Kirk won twice tonight. She won in the drawing, oddly enough, and then now has answered the question correctly. So, hey, Mary Jo, go buy a lottery ticket. It's your night. So, great. Well, congratulations, Mary Jo. Glad you're paying attention. And be sure to get out of Arizona and go up to the Great Lakes and enjoy some of the fine fishing up there. Mary Jo, if you will send us your... you can use the same box that you just used. Put in your address, your shipping address, and along with your phone number. I do have your email address here, so I don't need that. And then we'll get your information over to Rizzoli, and they'll ship you out a book directly from the publisher, Fishable Feast. And for those of you that didn't win the book tonight, there's right there on the right side of our homepage there, I've listed Matt's book, Fishable Feast, there, along with all his other books there, too. So if you're interested in exploring the other things that Matt has written, check those books out, too. We've got direct links to those. And then, again, if you want to learn more about the other shows we did with Matt on brown trout and salmon and so forth, just go to the top-line menu, search the archive, put in Matt Sipinski, and you'll find all the shows that we did in the past with him. So, well, Matt, thanks. I really appreciate you being on the show with us again. It's a pleasure to talk with you. And thanks for sharing your knowledge and your culinary expertise. And I can't wait to try out a lot of these recipes in your book. It'll be lots of fun. So thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Yes, thank you, Roger. It was always a pleasure with you. And, yes, I hope you try the recipes. And please, everyone, if you could write reviews, we really appreciate the reviews, like on Amazon and stuff like that or wherever. That helps us market the book better. And cook and have fun and enjoy the passion and joy of life and angling and cooking and exploring and foraging in the woods. It's all one giant, beautiful experience.
That is. That's called living, right? Called living.
Joie de vivre, the joy of life. Yeah. Amen.
Great. Well, thanks again. Our next broadcast will be on May 20th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'll interview Jake Bilwalk. And on our show will be Top Water to Bottom, Cracking the Code on Smallmouth Bass. Smallmouth bass aren't just aggressive, they're strategic. Jake breaks down how to consistently catch more fish by targeting all through three feeding zones, top water, mid column, and bottom. He reveals how modern fly design, from foam bugs to articulated bait fish and lifelike crayfish, has transformed the game. Whether you're chasing explosive surface eats or dialing in subsurface tactics, you'll learn how to fish smarter, adapt faster, and unlock the full potential of smallmouth on the fly. Be sure to add this show, this upcoming show, to your calendar on our homepage. Click on that calendar link right below Jake's picture, and you can add it to your calendar, and then you won't miss out on the show. I'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, and the Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and as well as Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future live broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.